Blog Talk Radio.
The windows are straight to ease, and then hit this inner part. There should be something that takes place. It's so steady right now.
Saturday,
1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to the View with your host, Benjir Satanis, and the Beast.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm Beast Zeno, and this is my co-host, Benjir Satanis. Benjir, how are you today?
I'm good, as usual. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. No more than the normal muddy waters of life, so... we've actually got one of our two guests, I believe, online right now. I'm going to guess this is Naga?
Yeah, this is Naga Shiva. I'm here.
Hey, how's it going, Naga Shiva?
I'm doing fine. Thanks.
Good. All right, we're still waiting for Venus to call in, so... anything new or exciting that either of you two want to talk about while we're waiting to get the other guest on the line?
Well, I found out a little bit more about a historical proclaimant for early Satanism. I've been trying to track such things, and one of the individuals that I found out more about today was really a reference off of a book by... Gavin Baddeley called Lucifer Rising. It was a mention of someone by the name of Raymond Ramon Bogart, who claims to have started his activities in 1955 in Britain.
In 1955 in Britain, so that would kind of coincide with LaVey's actual movement, wouldn't it?
Oh, no. LaVey's church started in 1966, and I make it clear that these are claims because I think sometimes some of the individuals in the media will wish to predate their activities so as to precede the Church of Satan. And, this was an interview with Gavin Baddeley, and I'm sure it was way after the church and everything started, so he may have described his activities as 1955 so as to say he got to it first.
That's true. I do have that book, Lucifer Rising. What else does it say about this Bogart character in that book? I can't remember. It's been a few years since I've read it.
Oh, there's a small section on him. He's on page... 105 and 106, I think, and the notes I have for him are that he seems to have been describing himself as a Gnostic Satanism. Baddeley describes him as having claimed to have been following his own variety of Satanism since 1955, leading a number of covens on the bleak Lancashire moors, that he's variously described himself as a psychiatrist, a healer, and a ceiling plasterer, and that he called his creed Benelism. Apparently he describes Benel, or I don't know how it's pronounced, B-E-N-E-L, as another name for Satan. And he gives another description of that as non-malefic Satanism. Apparently he was on a talk show, a UK talk show called The Time and the Time the Place in 1988. And that's about as much as I can get out of that interview or that description by Baddeley.
Interesting. Now, I actually believe that Venus has joined us, so welcome, Venus.
Yes. Hi there.
Hey, Venus.
Hi.
Hey, it's so nice to be here again. Thank you for having us on as hosts again.
Yes.
Oh, no problem. Okay, actually, I just went to my satanic library. Actually, it's just general occultism and left-hand path stuff. Just a little bookshelf I have. I pulled out Lucifer Rising. I look at the page number, like 105, 106. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. It says, in Britain, Raymond Bogart claimed to have been following his own variety of Satanism since 1955. And his religion has gone under a variety of names, the New Order of Satanic Templars, the Northern Order of the Prince, and the Orthodox Temple of the Prince.
Exactly.
If all of that is true, then it's just fascinating to know that there's a history of Satanism beyond LaVey.
Oh, sure. I think most people would recognize that, even though what we think of now as Satanism, you know, maybe didn't exist before LaVey. I think several different parallel currents of, you know, satanic thought or left-hand pathism, was around. And does anyone here know much about things like the Hellfire Club and, you know,
I know that there's a man by the name of Francis Dashwood who is associated with that, and there have been books written about the activities of the Hellfire Club. I gather it was fairly outrageous and anti-Christian in its character. I don't know much more about what they did in terms of their regular activities. I don't think they identified themselves as Satanists or anything like that, but I'm not that completely sure about it.
From what I've heard, I think it was more about the blasphemy and the outrage and, you know, the aesthetics of it, rather than spiritual, you know. It didn't have much spiritual foundation. It was more about indulgence, I guess. And
yeah.
In that way, maybe it's more like the Church of Satan than most early Satanists or satanic groups.
There's a book by the name of The Hellfire Club's History of Anti-Morality. I think that's by Jeffrey Ash, and it's a decent introduction to the subject.
Cool. That's good. Good thing to research. So, I mean, really, any outsider has probably at one time or another been proclaimed satanic by, you know, the powers that be or the status quo, the mainstream, the church, which is, you know, up until modern times, you know, the church has had a fair amount of power and influence in all types of society, you know, all avenues of different cultures and civilizations. So really, any kind of outsider, outcast, or person that did their own thing, their own way, was probably deemed satanic at some point by someone.
Yeah, I think that was fomented by Christian culture, and it developed a kind of iconic description that became something that could be identified in society and then plastered over whoever it was that they wanted to eliminate and then described. And a number of instances were Gnostics and Jews, and these people were sometimes violently and aggressively destroyed by Christians.
Right. You know, for a very long time, the word Satanism was used as a slander. But it seems like that nowadays that people are willing to identify with that name, and because of that, it doesn't really have the same meaning anymore.
That's true. I think Christians could get away with dismissing someone or some concept or some, you know, some organization by calling it satanic, and therefore it was, you know, not to be considered or taken seriously, or taken seriously but only to the point that it should be denounced, and I guess everybody within it or a part of it should burn in hell or something. But yeah, now with the modern times, I think people are taking that label and doing something positive with it. You know, it's, as LaVey would say, it's the whole, well, obviously he didn't coin the phrase turning lemons into lemonade, but that type of thing, like taking a positive, or taking a negative and making a positive out of it. You know, embracing the, I don't know, the backwards thinking of the people that are accusing you or opposing you.
I think he was part of a movement. My impression is that the preceding activity was undertaken by the witchcraft religious, which began in Europe and Britain primarily in response to the repealing of anti-witchcraft laws. And at that time, people began to publish books and give interviews. And Gerald Gardner established a museum and of witchcraft, and that's where, of course, Wicca began in a reflection of ceremonial magic and Aleister Crowley's writings, as I understand it. And that was a really good example of taking the descriptions and ideology of subversion that Christians were generating and turning it into something positive and making a religion out of it. My understanding is that previously witchcraft was not considered religious. It was something that was either monstrous or heretical or something of the kind, extending all the way back to the witch craze.
Right. You know what? It almost seems that Wiccans and witches had to go through the same thing that Satanists are going through now by taking a word and an idea that used to mean something that was considered evil or a slander, and they're actually making something good out of it. You know, I think we're both participating in a similar struggle.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I think it's cathartic. My impression is that the activity is related, or can be related, to what is described in Christian religion itself as a form of witnessing to power in a way that is contrary to that power's desires.
And you know what? I think that that Satanism arose out of that negative culture, and they were able to organize it into something that was actually useful for society.
Yeah, that seems to be what the Cult of Cthulhu and a number of organizations and orders, whatever, are attempting to do as well, is to create something positive out of what the past has been.
Right. But unfortunately, back in the 1980s, there was a satanic panic, and unfortunately, it seemed that a lot of what was focused on during the panic was absolute lies. There was no proof of these satanic murdering cults, and it seems that Christians really missed the point, because Satanism was around during that time, but it wasn't the Satanists that were participating in what they claimed that they were doing.
Right. And most of the time it was just complete fabrication anyway. Like, you know, the satanic cults that would, I don't know, raise children just to murder them, or, you know, do weird rituals where they'd be, you know, raped and tortured and stuff like that. I mean, 99% of that, all those stories were just completely made up. And then fueled by the media attention, and people embraced it as truth. I think really all that stuff is just comes in periods and cycles. Just like now, there's a lot of anti-Muslim thinking and unrest, because, you know, of course, the 9/11 attacks, which I guess this is the anniversary of that.
Right. That's why I wanted to have the show today.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. To me, it's directly tied in. There's a kind of fear mongering that is associated with Islam now, and it is a I think a direct successor to the Satanic Panic, and I think these things have been going on for at least 100 years.
I would say, I'd say they've been going on since the earliest times of man. I think if you actually trace it back, there's always been periods where certain innovators and outsiders and free thinkers have been persecuted by the masses, and you know, it comes and goes, but I think it's always been there. You know,
I don't
even
think
before
it's been
Christianity and Satanism and
I don't think
that
the influence of technology and mass media has had an effect until the last century, especially the early part of last century at the earliest. And it may be that that's exacerbating it, and what you're talking about, it does has occurred in rumor panics and whatnot. But I don't think that we've had the kinds of things that have gone on that have extended, say, from one country to another, that were global in some instances, and especially widespread in the same way that we do now.
Yeah, in the beginning, I'm sure that it was more of a tribal thing. If no one has seen it, and I've talked about this before, the original black and white British TV serial, Quatermass in the Pits, I highly, highly recommend it. It's just, I don't know, I mean, it's a little slow moving, but the atmosphere and the content and everything is just magnificent. And, you know, in there, I mean, there's so many ideas that other groups have picked up on and things like that. But there's an idea of, like a racial purge that happens periodically where people that aren't like the group, are basically, you know, hunted down or killed or driven out of the tribe or, you know, one nation or society goes to war with another. And, you know, that's just something that's fundamental to humanity, I think, because, well, we're all products of the universe. I think the universe benefits from our, you know, our not getting along and our fighting each other.
I hope that's not true. I mean, I hope that it's not fundamental to humanity. My impression is that it's primarily aimed at people who are coming from what's perceived to be the outside, and it's a function of xenophobia. And with greater communication and knowledge and education, that kind of thing might be assuaged, and we may have that kind of thing stop happening so often. I think that it's been very obvious with pogroms and with you know, the Holocaust, and with very recent historical identification of genocide in Africa and in lots of different places, these things have become seen as atrocities, and there's some pressure against them now.
I definitely think that that can be overcome. But at the same time, I think, you know, we just have to look at history to know that that kind of thinking and being is inherent and, to a large degree, humanity, but I guess all life, you know, that's a part of natural selection, I suppose. And then, but like you were saying, Nagashiva, today, I think there's a greater desire to overcome all that stuff and look beyond it. For instance, in the news, what's that guy's name? Terry Jones, the pastor from Florida, I think. He was going to burn all those Korans today.
I heard about that.
And all these people came out of the woodwork against it. And like, no, don't do that, don't do that. And I'm not sure if he's doing it. I think he's postponing it or he's canceled it. I'm not sure. But, you know, 50 years ago, I think, or maybe even 5 years ago, people would have been like, yeah, go for it. That's what you should do. You know, there'd be people on both sides. But everybody seems to be condemning him. Nobody seems to be coming out on the news or in politics, like, for that, like, you know, supporting him.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. What are your guys' take on that bit of local news? Not local, but recent news.
Well, you know, I have to have to watch things like that happen, and it just makes me think about freedom of religion and how people claim that here in America we have freedom of religion. But it just goes to show that there are still people out there who are really worried about others who aren't of the same religion. And then
right.
I think about Satanism, and I think about how so many of us Satanists have to live underground or in the shadows or not in the full view of society because we can't, because we feel that we should have freedom of religion, but in reality we don't. A lot of us would lose our jobs, lose our homes, lose our families and everything else if we came out and were honest with people that we are Satanists. And it's very unfortunate because it kind of limits us, but in a way it doesn't, because it allows us to do what we're going to do anyway without having to be public about it. You know, it's definitely a struggle for Satanists and for anybody who is into an alternative religion.
Yeah, I think that's an essential element. I mean, I understand that what I have maintained about this is controversial amongst Satanists, but my understanding is that it's essential to be revising these nightmare images and loaded terms in a way that is revolutionary, and this is in part for the breaking down of these kinds of social pressures that inhibit alternative or novel religions, and witchcraft religion and Satanist religion and vampire religion and demonologers and what I'm predicting will be the demon religions of the future are a part of that struggle and help to promote freedom of religion in the context in which we present them. And the first group of those, I think, of those who engage it are more cognizant of that religious struggle than perhaps some of those who follow them.
Do you think those nightmare images work to people's advantage? You know, Satanists and left-hand paths and... you know, I like what you said, the demon religions of the future. Do you think the sort of shocking, stimulating imagery and rhetoric, ideology, do you think that helps it, or do you think that's more of a detriment in the long run?
It's a detriment and a weight, kind of like a Sisyphean weight that we have to either accept or try to throw off. It's something that it's like putting on a big scary costume and people take it for real. And that's right. To me, that's just something that I live in a liberal zone. I mean, I live in California, and it's a lot easier out here to be outrageous, to be a Satanist, and to
sure.
promote those kinds of images, ideology, whatever that's supporting freedom primarily. But I think it's a detriment. I think that kind of thing is self-hobbling, and anyone who is upset about that might benefit from looking at the history of the social movement.
Right. What's your take, Beast? You've been pretty quiet so far.
Yeah, I've been listening to the conversation. I just hope that someday we're all able to have freedom of religion without being... without having to face prejudice, but I don't think that's going to happen without education and knowledge. And right now, people have an opportunity to have access to that kind of knowledge. You know, it's today. It's like it never has been before, because today people can go online and they can research any kind of religion, and they can see the good side of it and they can see the bad side of it before coming to a decision. And we've never had that opportunity before. And you know. And it's amazing, and I hope it really does good things for us.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, I think it's interesting, as far as the character of Satanism goes, I think it's very interesting that Satanists have developed their own mythologies for Satan. The mythologies that Christians had for Satan really aren't the same as the kind of mythologies that Satanism uses. It's very different because it shows Satan in a positive light, in a very inspiring way, and it's so much different than the images and the imagery that Christianity always portrayed about Satan.
Yeah, heroic, Promethean. There's a lot of value that's put into those kinds of stories. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to hearing more from Beast also.
I'm actually just kind of sitting here because I see a couple of different things going on. And I'm not really sure what my final analysis of them would be. The first thing that I noticed in particular regard to Satanism is an attempt to kind of create a hybrid between the Levian ideology and, currently the most popular is Eastern thought and philosophy, but I've seen mixtures just about any walk that you can think of. Some years ago, there was a type of Satanism that was being promoted by a guy who calls himself Leo Lane on the internet. That Satanism was Gonzo Satanism, and it had kind of a, I'm trying to think of what, Discordian philosophy behind it. So I think in that way, there's an attempt to build towards some religious tolerance, but I think that no matter which way you slice it or dice it, ultimately there has to be that struggle. There's always going to be opposing ideologies, or else you lose the essence of individuality. The ignorant hatred that some people see other people find just and with cause. I really think that it's kind of a pipe dream to think that there will ever be a period, no matter how much education or how much understanding is given, that there will ever be a period where there isn't somebody who's going to call bullshit on somebody else.
Right.
So, I mean, where the idea is very novel, and I mean, I would like to see something like that come about. I just don't see it's realistic, and I also think that if it did come about, it may create a stagmentation. People would no longer strive towards gaining and growing. I think that kind of conflict is always there as a kind of natural force, I guess, or a natural... I guess force is the only word that I can really think of at the moment to kind of push things along and help us develop. Without those kind of struggles, we don't come to new understandings of things. So, again, like I said, though, these are just, things that I've noticed, and I'm not necessarily solid on any of them, although I would say that it would take a lot to convince me otherwise.
I agree with you strongly. I think that those kinds of struggles are not only valued and have been for a long time, but they're of a different character than the smearing, slanderous, subversion nightmares that are promoted, or have been promoted at least, by overarching and dominating theodicies, theocrats, and religions that have been in power for too long and been able to promote folklore that they are then able to use to slam their religious competitors. To me, that's a different character than the kind of thing you're describing, where you have face-to-face struggling between ideas, debating with people, and on a level field. I think that's that kind of struggle and that kind of competition in a religious setting is really good.
Well, I can see the value of what you're saying here, Naga. The thing that comes to my mind is that it takes that initial shock for people to really shift, their trained line of thinking. I mean, everybody, as you grow up, you kind of have this, outlined set of ethics and values and lines of thinking that are mainly influenced by your immediate family, and then as you're, placed into a larger and larger social environment, it slowly shifts and changes, but not much. In order to really create a drastic difference of opinion within one region or area, you kind of need to have that that demonizing of certain things. So where I can, like I said, see the value of what you're saying, and my thoughts are that it's still a necessary occurrence.
Is that something that you want to undertake yourself?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Is that something that, if it becomes in secular society a no-no, a PC transgression to begin to slam religious competitors in the same way, then in order to preserve that, if you think it's valuable, is that something that you'd want to foment yourself, starting to demonize other people in a random or an orchestrated fashion?
If I felt that it served a greater means, then yes, probably, but as my current stance right now, no. It wouldn't be something I would be interested in. I'm also kind of the iconoclastic mindset anyways, where I really don't see a necessity for religion, so to speak. I'm more, more into the spiritual aspect of things, and I tend to I think of myself as having been drawn to Satanism because of its promise of being anti-religion. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if that answers your question or not, but those are my thoughts on it.
Did you want to say something, Venus?
Well, yeah, I kind of wanted to comment on V's last comment where he spoke about why he was drawn to Satanism. I was drawn to Satanism not because of rebellion, but because I felt that I finally found a path that I could really relate to. It was the kind of path that gave me personal freedom and personal empowerment, and I felt that through Satanism I could live my life just the way that I wanted to without having any fear or guilt or doubt. You know, and I think that a lot of Satanists find that, and I think that's why Satanism is so valuable to society, because there will always be those type of people that will enjoy identifying with those kind of things. And it wasn't until LaVey created his own form of Satanism that he made those kind of things socially acceptable. You know. So we can at least thank LaVey for making Satanism socially acceptable.
Do you have any personal accounts, Venus, in your own life, like actual examples where you might be discriminated against or viewed in a certain way because of your religious beliefs or
your
philosophical opinions?
A couple years ago, I was working a job. And I had a friend there who was involved in Wicca, and I had actually initiated her into her own path of Wicca, and I was actually really proud of her because she finally decided to do her own thing and live her own life in a good way. So we became close friends, and we both worked at the same place. And unfortunately, she would bring her Wiccan books in all the time and sit there and read them whenever she had time off. And the boss would walk by, and he'd see the book on the table, and he didn't like it at all. And he started to get upset, and he told her that she wasn't allowed to bring her books in anymore. And I did not like that at all. And then the word got out that I was a Satanist, and then he started giving me weird looks, too. And so I finally decided to do something about it. I actually typed up a letter for him where I explained that if we didn't have our rights the way that we're supposed to have our rights, that I would have no problem taking the issue to the ACLU and let them know what was going on. And guess what? A week later, that manager was fired, and we were allowed to have our books at our workplace. I was really happy.
Oh, that's great.
You know,
an inspiration, I think.
Oh, yeah. I had no choice but to stand up for myself and to stand up for my friend, too. And thought, you know what? We don't do it. Nobody else is going to do it for us.
Right.
That's very fascinating. What about you, Nadia? Any stories of similar nature?
I think the one that stands out in my mind primarily was when I was living in the South San Francisco Bay and regularly taking a bus to a security position that I was working as a security guard. And I had a publication called Not Like Most, which was put out by Matt Paradise. I had an interview in it because I was doing outreach for the Church of Euthanasia at the time. And I was reading it on the bus, and a conservative bully took offense at it and was very aggressive and threatening. And I took quite a bit of time. I only encountered him two or three times negotiating that. Initially, I was just trying to get away from him because I didn't like the fact that he was threatening me. But eventually, I confronted him on a bus trip that we were both on and talked with him about it and let him know that I wasn't trying to threaten him, and he asked that I keep my books away from him. And I never saw him again after that. But that was the greatest extent of any discrimination that I faced, I think.
I've never actually had an instance where I've run into anybody discriminating, or if it has happened, I've been oblivious to it. So it's interesting to hear stories like this.
Yeah, it was quite a challenge to my ideals of pacifism, because the way that I've grown up, in part, I've primarily run from situations of violence. And not been a fighter, and been an advocate of peace, and to be confronted with that directly in my local atmosphere was something that I had to figure out. Okay, well, what am I going to do about that, and how should I deal with it with this individual? And it was unpredictable since I didn't know when I might meet up with him again.
Now I'm interested in one thing, and actually I've asked you about it before, but I think it'd be kind of cool to, get it up here on the show. How does it work being a passive Satanist? I mean, how does that happen?
Well, I would describe pacifism as different than being passive, and The differentiation is one of activity level, in the sense that usually when someone's described as passive, they're described as not doing anything. And as a pacifist, there are many routes of conflict resolution which are nonviolent, and some of which are advocated by very well-known individuals such as Martin Luther King Jr. and Mohandas Gandhi. The way that I come to those, besides that just being my natural interest, is because my dedication to Kali inspires me to have compassion for the underdog, for those who are demonized, and for those who are put upon by larger powers, to try to defend them, to try to get to an accurate view of what it is they really are, and what kind of a threat, if any, that they truly are. To me, that revolution that I was talking about is partly informed as a pacifistic struggle. And that's why, in part, I am happy to, in my local atmosphere, for example, wear a turban and robes, and people will occasionally mistake me for a Muslim or an Orthodox Christian or something. And the encounters with such individuals, whether they're online or in person, and I've had a number of both, are transformative. It's that's why I connected it with Christianity before. I think it's a witnessing process where one speaks from one's heart, places oneself upon the cross, and is honest and truthful and willing to engage the consequences in a very transformative experience. That's all part, to me, of what Satanism is about.
Oh, yes. I was going to say that that's very difficult for any Satanist to do, because a lot of us choose to only really express our Satanism online, and we have a hard time taking it in person, you know, to be personal with people offline about it, because we know that most times people are going to have a negative reaction to it. I mean, I've had friends and people that I've known for years, and then years later I told them that I'm a Satanist, and I've actually lost friends because of that. And a lot of times I'll have people come out and tell me that they never realized that I was a Satanist because I'm such a nice person, because I'm a nice, caring person, you know. And they just can't believe it, you know. And I hope that I'm able to shatter that stereotype that they have about Satanism.
I'd like to add something that my guru just contributed towards our conversation, which was she observed quite rightly that the instances of discrimination that we've been describing involved books or reading materials, and that people were upset about such things. And that's interesting considering the, today's activities when people are talking about burning books, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Oh, yes.
I can volunteer something. It was recently brought to my attention that some, I guess mostly parents, I don't know exactly how many, but it sounds like more than one, have called down to the office of the high-rise student apartment building that I partly own, and have questioned our office manager about, you know, certain of my, you know, non-work activities, and, you know, they heard somehow, you know, probably through, you know, some avenue of the internet, maybe Facebook or something, that I might be involved in a cult or something like that. And anyway, I created this little, basically a cheat sheet for our office manager to use if someone inquired into my, you know, my activities that don't involve the building.
Huh.
So, but that's, you know, obviously that's potentially a hazard. Not so much for myself that I'm concerned, but, you know, the other owners of the building and our employees and things like that. I mean, if, you know, if someone wanted to go out of their way to, I don't know, tarnish my reputation or something like that in, you know, the real world and in the, you know, not having anything to do with the cult world, but, you know, just the ordinary everyday, you know, having to do with my career, then, you know, that could be a problem. And so, yeah, I was concerned about it. And, I did create this, you know, this thing for office manager to tell the person who was inquiring that, like, oh, it's based on, you know, a role-playing game or, you know, the fiction that Derek writes or, you know, the artwork that he produces. And it's, you know, it's for entertainment purposes only, and it's, you know, based on the fiction of H.P. Lovecraft. And I don't know, just to calm parents down because I can understand that. I mean, if I had a child that was going to college, you know, away from home, and they were living in a building, and then I found out that, you know, on the other side of the coin, I found out that one of the owners was this, you know, sort of Bible Belt fundamentalist Christian, you know, I might be a little worried and freaked out. I might want to know, you know, is this person going to, you know, do my child harm or something like that, or is he going to get, you know, involved in other stuff? So,
yeah, there's something called Campus Crusade for Cthulhu, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Cthulhu for President, and there's that's a direct tie-in also to something that preceded the Satanic Panic, which was the anti-cultism movement, where
really?
People were describing people as cultists, and there was a great deal of emphasis placed on new religious groups and how dangerous they might be. And Isaac Bonowitz put out his ABCD frame that was describing what I would call the problems of religion, but he described it as the problems of cults and their leader centricity and all kinds of other things. And that may be a leftover of the anti-cultism movement in the 80s.
Wasn't Isaac Bonowitz, wasn't he a member of the early Church of Satan as well?
Yes, he was. Yes, he grew disgruntled with it because of the way that they treated him. And I gather that they did not give him the attention or the kind of attention that he desired. And so he went on an anti-Satanism crusade through the latter part of his life.
Interesting. I just want to make mention that we're within the last 14 minutes of our show, and so we're going to open the phone lines, 347-989-1371. If anybody wants to call in, now is the time to do it. In the meantime, I'm trying to think. I had a couple of thoughts before Venger got into his story about the quick answers sheet that he made for the front office, but now I can't think of it, so
Well, I have something to mention.
Continue.
The early portions, I don't know how early, but the early portions of Satanism's arising seem repeatedly to reflect something of the Gnostic religion. And there's a man who's identified in Ohio, Toledo, Ohio, by the name of Herbert Arthur Sloan, who was a barber and a tarot reader at least, and an occultist. And he drew from a book called The Gnostic Religion by Hans Jonas, and was making a religion there of Satanism, quite an unusual group of people, and a life-size doll, and all kinds of really odd things. Our Lady of Endor Coven, Ophite Cultus Satanas. And their Gnostic ideology is not the only one that I've found reflected in the Satanism subculture. I think that's a popular alternative to inversion Christianity or something Egypt-like.
Well, you know what, it almost seems very natural that people would have desired to take up a Gnostic position in Satanism, because from what I understand, what the Gnostics believed was that Satan was the one who provided humans with the knowledge that would protect them and help them. So, you know, it really falls in line with what Satanists would like to believe about Satan.
Totally. Like any diverse religious group, the Gnostics were multivalent, and some of them were Christians. But a number of them seem to have had the idea that the whole Christian cosmology was incorrect, and this was the construction, this universe, or this portion of the universe, was a construction of an archon, the demiurgos, and that we could be saved from that monster and zookeeper by connecting in with Jesus or with Sophia or some liberating entity, and some of them apparently appealed to Satan.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd also like to say that I'm glad that we're going to take some calls today, because the last time we were on the show, we only got to take a couple calls.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. No one has called in yet, as far as I know.
Oh, I see.
Now the switchboard's still sitting empty. I'm guessing that's because some people have problems answering.
If anyone calls, we'll know.
Yeah, we're definitely
surfing for him while we're doing the show.
This kind of examination of the early portions of Satanism is something that I really enjoy a lot, and that's why I've tried to peg within sociologists' records, and such as Gordon Melton and James R. Lewis and other people who might have been early people conducting activities that could be described and who self-described as Satanists. Another of them was in Southern California by the name of Donald Ross Blythe, and he made something called Satan's Agogo Club and the Weird Museum, and a group that called themselves the Brotherhood of the Ram. And some of those people are still alive. I'm trying to get in contact with as many of the people who are left over from some of these groups and their activities to find out what they were really up to and when, because some of them predate themselves to prior to the Church of Satan.
Right, and you know what, you have a lot of that information posted on your website, and I'm looking forward to having some of that information posted over at our new Satanism wiki that we've been putting together.
Right.
I think the Satanism wiki is going to be a great project.
Yeah, that's Satanism.
All right, we've got our first caller in. Caller.
Wonderful.
Yeah, what's up, dude?
Hi, Kenny.
Oh, it's
chicken wings.
Chicken wings.
Gotta love it, man.
Is today a lucky day, too?
What?
Well, I just listened to the previous show, and it was lucky 21 then, and I've heard something about lucky 23, and I'm just wondering.
No, that's about the number of beers I've drunk.
Okay.
It's
Nigel, what's
lucky
up, man?
13. But hey, what's up, Jason? Mr. King. For those who don't know, Jason King is the author of Postmodern Satanism, which
we highly
recommend, along with such books as the Satanic Bible, Bible Bay. And going to the left-hand path.
Dude, my shit is better than LaVey's shit and not quite as good as Flowers. So let's put it out there. But anyway, what's
okay.
up, Venger?
Nothing. I mean, all good stuff. How are you doing?
It's all good. I mean, you know what I really loved, and I said this in the chat room, is I love the fact that we're all getting together. There's like a bunch of people in the chat room, like Bourne is there, Dark Fool's there. Fucking Sin is there. Everybody's there. It's like we're all here. And that's fucking awesome. And that's the thing that I don't want to piss on when I start pissing on stuff. No, I'm just kidding. the guests, Venus and Naga, are just awesome. And I can't stop plugging, especially Naga, enough, because a lot of people don't know who this guy is, and I've known who this guy is for years. He's behind the scenes, he's a researcher, he's like a scholar, he's a satanic scholar, and he's out there like digging, and he was in this fucking same show, he was bringing shit up about how he was digging stuff up, and he was like actually doing some research, and it's just awesome. But the question that I want to ask, because I'm a guest on this show, which is for these two individuals that are just awesome with regard to Satanism, is where do you see Satanism going within, like, let's say the next generation, 30 years? A generation is about 30 years. Where do you see it going, and what do you see becoming, and what do you want to do to make it go there? And I'll shut the fuck up, and it's your floor.
Go ahead, Venus.
Thank you. You know what? I think that's a very good question. It's something that I've wondered about for a long time. The thing that I'm hoping for most in Satanism, as far as the future goes, as far as the future of all of Satanism, I hope that people begin to realize the importance of independent Satanism. Because while group Satanism is a great thing and it gives people a chance to get together and to learn certain things, nothing really compares to being independent, you know, and that's the thing that I would like to see in Satanism in the future, is more independent Satanists.
Okay, that's good. Nagashiva, one of you, I'm just trying to hurry everybody along because we only have like 5 minutes left.
That's fine. I used to have a Mattel toy set called Hot Wheels Tracks, and they used to have a little engine on it that would have little rubber wheels on them. And you'd put your car through it, and it would spin them, and zoom, they'd go flying out the other side along the tracks. I'd like to make something like that for the individuals in who participate in Satanism by virtue of education, self-education, and self-empowerment. And my interests are the construction of tools that people can do that for themselves.
Okay. So like a fast track of I don't know, self-improvement?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Beast?
Where would I like to see it going? I think that I think Naga pretty much has hit the nail on the head in terms of that. I'd like to see not just you know the focus on individualism and the kind of fast track development of the self, but I'd like to see group Satanism move back to a more focused on helping the individuals within. I think that that's what the purpose of group Satanism has to be, is the development of the individual. So I'd like to see that kind of trend happen.
Okay. So we got greater independence, fast track to self-improvement, and Beast, you were talking about sort of the group's focus being on supporting and raising up of individual abilities or, you know, skills, things like that. Am I getting it right?
Sure. Yes, you're getting it right. I mean, what I see a lot right now is that seems to be more of everybody within the group focusing on the group rather than focusing the group itself focusing on everybody. So I'd like to see a reverse in that trend.
Cool. Well, for myself, the way I think things will go, which coincides with the way I hope things will go, is that all the various groups out there, you know, the Brotherhood of the Goat and, you know, the Luminaries of the Ram and, you know, the Prophets of Ares and the Satanic Temple and the Temple of Satanism and, you know, the Order of, you know, Lucifer, whatever, all these little groups will sort of understand that we're all coming from the same place, and everybody can keep their group and keep their own little brand of identity and their own little niche or focus, all the while we just sort of recognize that, you know, we're all part of something greater, we're all moving towards commonalities and common goals, and we can affect change on a world level. Now, on a world stage, and you know, really be a force to be reckoned with. I mean, the whole individual spirituality and the gnosis that comes from that, I think that's just as important as you know, results oriented, real world change, you know, manifested on a world level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the reason why. That's the reason why I wrote The Gospel of Satan, was to have a transformative effect in the world beyond Satanism.
Cool. And how can people read that? Is that online?
It's at gospelofsatan.com.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a link on the show's description page. You can get right
to it.
One other thing I'd like to see happen in Satanism, I'd like to see Chicken Wings answer emails every once in a while.
He answers mine. Sometimes more than you other guys.
Oh, he fell off the switchboard. Now I feel bad because I'm poking fun at him and he's not even on here.
That's okay.
That's okay. We'll catch him on the flip side.
He's still
Hopefully people also go to the cult website, cultofcthulhu.net. And we've got some new content in the beliefs section, some new left-hand path essays recently. Hopefully people check those out, post their feedback somewhere, either right on there as a comment or on the Cthulhu forum or someplace like that, or email us individually. So I want to thank you guys for coming on, Nagashiva and Venus Lepanis, and thanks, Beast Zeno, for co-hosting with me. And I'll give the floor to Beast.
close us out.
All right. Guess I'm going to just say we'll see everybody next week.
Great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Cthulhu, but again.
Thank you for listening to The Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily reflect those held by Venture or Beast or any institution associated with us. The Ooze does not condone any illegal or unethical acts. If you have been offended during the production of the show, we're sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Thank you, and see you next week.